Hello?
Hello?
Jessica?
Oh, hi. Sorry, go ahead.
This is Joanne Hickey. How are you?
I'm doing okay. Sorry, my headphones must not be working.
No, you know, I'm recording this on an app.
Okay.
And so when the initial call comes in, it's a little wonky.
Okay.
So that's probably what you're hearing.
Okay.
How are you?
I'm doing all right. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. This is our first meeting, I'm sorry to say. Wish I'd had an occasion to meet you in the past, but I don't recall that we have ever had occasion to speak.
No, I don't think so.
I'm grateful that you took some time today to speak with me, and I'm really happy to include you in this little project we're working on.
Okay, thank you so much.
I wondered if we might begin by telling me how and when art began to enter your life.
At a pretty young age, my mother is an artist, not all the time. She's a full-time mom with 7 kids. But she just recognized that that's what I liked doing best and really encouraged it. So I was, you know, pretty young when I was allowed that to be the thing that I wanted to do all the time. And she put me in classes, you know, starting in 3rd, 4th grade. I went to a creative arts grade school and a creative arts high school. And she taught me how to draw and also gave me oil paint when I was 10 to start working with. So it was at a pretty young age.
And when you look back at the history of your work from those young ages to the present, what elements do you see have persisted through the years?
You know, it's hard to just look back, you know, and think, but I am definitely a doer and a maker. I work through making things. It's very physical, tactile. So my approach to painting and drawing is I use and think a lot about perception, but I think a lot about the tactile and the physical part of it. And I think that that was probably what drew it to me at a young age. And also just the possibility of the ideas of seeing what we are thinking and kind of the power of art to sort of like manifest things that we see as, and especially if you can think of me as a young girl, but I don't see represented. So I think that's something that has, I think, motivated me for a long time.
And what took you to abstract?
You know, I would say in art school, I went to Maryland Institute College of Art. You know, you start sort of with figuration just because that's what's knowable and what's taught in many ways. But I think I just, abstraction interested me because it seemed the best way to represent how life is really experienced. And what was real to me was abstraction. And for me, abstraction comes from living or from experience and not necessarily a thing that you quotate from art history or something. I think also in art school, my teacher, Jo Smale, who is a Baltimore-based artist, she had this approach to abstraction that was really alive for me, that were really related to life. And she was a major mentor for me in art school. And also studying Merleau-Ponty in art school, perception and experience, that led me to abstraction too.
It's really interesting to hear you talk about abstraction in this way. I personally came to experience that the life I've lived and my subconscious mind feeds my aesthetic. That's what draws me to a specific work so powerfully is something that I've lived something that's in my body, in my mind.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe I'm not so aware of it. So it's interesting to hear you speak of that from the maker's point of view.
Mm-hmm.
I find that really fascinating. I'm really interested in neuroscience.
Oh, I am too.
Tell me more about that.
I guess for me, like neuroscience, neurobiology, and how what they've, you know, this, I'm going to be not as articulate about this as I can be about art, but like what's sort of been discovered in the last few decades about how our body is connected to our mind and how it's interwoven and mind isn't separated from body, and also the importance of emotion in perception and decision making. Antonio Damasio is someone that I've read, Descartes' Error, and also The Feeling of What Happens, this idea of how consciousness comes into being through our brain and through our body is interesting to me.
Have you read the book, The Meaning of the Body? Somebody, he's out of the University of Oregon.
No, I haven't.
Because, he defies the idea of a duality and the mind and the body, how connected they are. It's a really fascinating read.
Mm-hmm.
I am fascinated with this area as well, so it's nice to meet a kindred.
Yeah, no, I don't really find many people there.
I mean,
like
I speak about it all the time.
For a long time, it's like the root of my thinking, and it stems from like interest in philosophy in school, you know, but not many people have read that much stuff, or it just seems they don't know how to translate it into art speak or something. So they don't know how to get near it, or I don't know. I mean, I think an artist that's been really important to me, although people don't see it so much visually, is Agnes Martin.
Right.
And Anne Treat, both of those artists. And I think both of them really work with the mind and the body,
mm-hmm.
and how we see and how we feel through seeing. And that's the minimalism that I kind of am drawn to. Minimal form I'm drawn to more, and I think it's part of how to them art is a form of thinking, and the connection between the mind, the body, and the hand making things.
Which takes you to drawing.
Yeah.
And drawing is obviously a major part of your practice.
Mm-hmm.
Would you talk to me a bit more about the place drawing holds for you in your artistry?
I would say in art school, I was a draw. Yeah, I think this happens for a lot of people that their drawings come before their paintings. But I was able to sort of express what I wanted to more in drawing, like the multiplicity of layers and things like that. I did large drawing installations my senior year of art school that I would pin small pieces of paper overlapping on the wall and things like that. I think that drawing regularly is different from sketching for me. It's like a way to get an idea down in a notation. And so when I was really trying to figure out my work after moving to New York, and so this is around 2002, I had to spend some time away from my studio to undergo a surgery, and I was in Minnesota with my family, and I started drawing again in like a drawing book and with colored pencils because that was what was there. And it became to me like a way to build a foundation for my work again. And these are my notebook drawings. These I do not really in the studio. I do them at home, or it's a drawing book is portable, so I can carry it with me. I can be direct. And these drawings are fairly abstract, but some of them come directly from looking at things around me. And I feel like there's something with drawing with the pencil, with the making of the mark. And it's just like on the blank page where it feels good to me. Like with the color, you know, it just sort of feels different from painting with a brush. And I think the drawing then started to, these little drawings became like the building blocks for the layers I put my paintings through. And then that's when I started making around 3 or 4 paintings a year, which I still am at that range. And drawing for me is this thing that's more immediate. And in 2008, I started doing these large works on paper, partly because, again, I was in a residency in Dijon. I couldn't bring my paintings with me. So because I work on a panel. And so I bought large paper and I started working on it. And it's, the way that paper can absorb pressure and also absorb the thing behind it. I started doing rubbings with the paintings and integrating them with the paintings and surfaces, integrating them into the drawings and working them analogously that I work my paintings, but differently because they can sort of absorb things differently. And so drawing is actually this thing that's very direct for me, also very experimental, because I started putting them on the ground in my studio and putting things in between them and piling, stacking them. And these are in between these are in places in my studio where there's a lot of traction. And I'm doing this at home right now too. But I think it's this way it can absorb time. And so I feel like this, I'm sorry, this is such a long answer.
No, I'm interested. Keep going.
Yeah, it's like it's drawing. It is it's something that provides something fundamental for me to work out the concepts in my work and the forms I'm going to use. And then it's this thing that's very experimental because my paintings I work on over a year's time, like 3 or 4 at the same time. And they take so long. I need the drawings to go to just like make things. And also I respond to them. They give me sort of ideas that go back into my paintings, or they give me single out something that's in a layer of a painting that can't stay there. So I single it out in a work on paper. And I get to be a little bit freer in them because my paintings work through specific, they're working towards, I don't know what they're going to look like, but they're working towards something specific. I'm really trying to figure out where the works on paper I can think on my feet a little bit more with them. And then I also make traces, which are not as worked drawings. It's sort of a lesson in restraint for me. They're a little bit smaller than the works on paper and on gray paper, and I make rubbings of my painting in different stages. And then also I'll put them in between or behind works on paper. I think the one that you have in your collection was underneath the work on paper when I was working on it, and it got registered all the holes. Mm-hmm. And then finally, there's the remainders, which are large graphite rubbings I make of my paintings. I first started doing them in 2009. I put the painting on the floor and do a rubbing of the final layer of the painting, and they were these final remainders where they were, what I liked about doing these rubbings is they would record like the surface of the painting, and they're on an index and they register the tactility of the painting and not the chroma of the painting. And so they register in a way we're capturing some objecthood and thingness of the painting, and they have this like ghost-like feeling. And also another thing where I can't, since I work my paintings and my works on paper so much and try to accrue so much time with them, the remainders are just this one-shot thing. I do it. And then it's done, and I can't mess with it, and it is what it is. And then I started after that, the next group of paintings, I started doing a remainder of the painting every time it went through significant change. And these are the remainder sets that now stay together with the paintings. They range between 7 and 24 remainders per painting. And those are done, they're not like I do it after a certain period of time, it's that they're done after, sometimes it'll take me months to finish a repetitive stage on a painting, and then I'll do a remainder. Sometimes I've just, it took me a day and I obliterated a large section of the painting, and then I do a remainder. So it captures these things that then get lost, not lost, but they become part of the painting, but they're not necessarily visible in the end. So the remainders are really important to me because they let me really bring my paintings to be what they needed to be, because a lot of the things are very labor intensive. So instead of holding on to it just because I made it, I do the remainder, and it helps me sort of move on to what the painting needs to be after it's accrued this time. So drawing for me like circles around my paintings. There's the four major things, the notebook drawings, works on paper, traces, and remainders. So it's a large part of what I do. And some ways very conceptual, sometimes very process-oriented. I think they're kind of linked for me. And then the drawings kind of take all these different elements out of the concepts behind the paintings and really work them out. And then finally, I have to say, again, this way the drawing, you exert pressure on a surface, either with a pencil, it led to things in my paintings where I maybe do a drawing of some marks, but what I really want to do is carve it into the surface. Like there's a point with my painting in 2009 where I was like, I need to carve this in. I need to push this in or obliterate this thing. And it had to do with this, it did have, had a lot to do with the frescoes I was looking at that get ruined through time, but also with this need to sort of exert physical pressure to make something rather than the way you do it with a brush.
It sounds like scarring in a way.
Yeah.
Think of it as scarring, like if you think of the skin and then scarring. And are you working with different kinds of papers?
Each element has a specific paper I work with. So
I see.
I don't mix it up with an. I think there's a lot of unknowns with my work, like when I'm making it. So I have very structured things with each thing. Like I'm not going to all of a sudden make a smaller or bigger work on paper. They're around the same size. And that's on Reed BFK, which is a very absorbent paper. It's a printmaking paper. And also I kind of like using it because that's what we use in art school. And so I try as my might for it never to feel like it did in art school, like a drawing. My works on paper sometimes feel like different, all these different types of surfaces. And I think part of it is I just want it to go beyond feeling like paper.
Mm-hmm.
And then the traces, which are the smaller gray ones, I needed that to be a thinner paper because I needed it to absorb more of the surface, or, you know, if I would do rubbing of a surface.
Mm-hmm.
And that's like a slight gray. That's a Stonehenge paper. I like it because it's gray, so I can use white on it, or I can use different. It really does some interesting perceptual chromatic things.
Mm-hmm.
And then the remainders. It took me a while to find that paper. I use a large roll of bond paper. It's not very fancy paper, and that's because it's. You know, when I first started making remainders, I experimented with, do I piece pieces together or how do I do this? And I just, it works because it's wider than my paintings and I can, it's thin and it gets as much of the surface up as possible when I rub the graphite on it. And I like that it's kind of white. It's like bold white, like a sheet of paper that you might get a Xerox on. And then the drawing books, I started off using this one kind and they stopped making it. This was a while ago. And for over a decade now, I've just used Moleskin large sketchbooks because I can carry it with me. And again, it's a little creamy. So sometimes I use white on it. So the colored paper helps sort of with the more reductive drawings, it helps have a sort of not pure white paper. So there's very specific thoughts in the paper.
Yeah, no, it's very rigorous, and it sounds like it's all on a continuum. When you do the notebooks, mm-hmm. do you keep your notebooks together?
Yeah. I mean, they are bound books that I buy, and then I draw on them, and I draw across the seam, and I... you know, it's a daily drawing practice. So it's not like, and I'm usually working with a poetic text that I've written that goes with it, mm-hmm. like a notation. So it takes me a while sometimes to get the drawing right. So these are drawing books where there's fits and starts. So I when I find the drawing that is expressing the thing I want, I tear it out and tape it together with linen tape, rebind it again with linen tape, and those go on my wall to help me figure out my paintings. Now, I started doing a series, it just happened during the lockdown for the pandemic,
mm-hmm.
and I'm experimenting with taking the drawing book all the way apart and making a more neat seam to rejoin them together. We're going to do a online viewing room show at James Fuentes of these when they're done. And I really realized when I was photographing them just in the book, I was like, what would it look like if it didn't have that, it wasn't as much of a tear. I kind of like the tear. So this is just an experiment to see how this feels in the end. Because I think these drawings may not be drawings that lead to new painting, other paintings, maybe some of them, they're becoming something on their own. Definitely a thinking through and will have an impact on the paintings. But since I'm not allowed to be in my studio all the time, I'm getting a lot out through the drawings.
Well, it's wonderful. I mean, it's a whole new avenue opening for you in a way, huh?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I try to make the most of every situation I'm in, but and you know, I still like the seam in the middle. I don't ever think, oh, I need 11 by 16 sheet of paper to work on. There's something about that, like drawing with the open book, and then it being closed and opened and closed and open, and then taken out to become visible on a wall that. There's something intimate about it for me that, you know, it makes sense to me.
Well, and the reference to a book and a page is, I like that.
Yeah.
Same way with, you mentioned a tear. I like seeing the tear.
Mm-hmm.
I like seeing the character and the nature of the paper somehow. If it's masked, I'm less interested typically.
Yeah. And I think there's a physicality to it that, you know, I like as well. And trust me, I'm trying my best with this scene, but they will look, you know, the way I work. So
the notebooks are rather journalistic in a way. Do you journal as well as all of these other avenues of your artistry?
I mean, I would say, yeah. I mean, I do, like, I have, in these notebook drawings are, as I say, these prose-like notes. And those are key to the painting. The writing is very important for the painting as well and helping me figure them out and what they're sort of, what's guiding them in many ways and where some of the titles come from. I have another, I call it my studio log. It's a little bit bigger book that's like, I'll do some writing, these prose-like notations that are also part of figuring out the paintings that don't necessarily have a drawing that goes with them. And they're grouped according to the painting I'm working on. So those often come to me while I'm working in the studio or just, you know, sometimes I just write something that doesn't have a visual thing that goes with it. I do have like another, for 15 years, I've been a pretty regular, like I have a little journal I write in that's more personal and less about exactly what I'm thinking about conceptually in the studio.
And you keep
yeah,
all,
I write.
You archive all this? You save them all?
I save them all. I don't know how I feel if those are read someday. I just have learned that it just helps me, live to write, you know, get things out. And I feel like one thing about being an artist and living a life as an artist is you don't get to be in your studio all the time doing what you want to do. So I've just figured out all these different systems to get thoughts out of me when I can. And that's partly what the notebook drawings are. That's what my studio log is. I'm a parent, I'm a teacher, often, and it's not like I can get to the thought right when I have it. And so I archive my thoughts as much as possible, and then I go back and look at them to figure out what I'm doing. And then the journaling helps me, you know, with personal things I'm going through or things I need to, you know, I'm not like daily about it. I'm more like when I need to write, I write.
Mm-hmm.
So
I have a question. From a collector point of view, something that I've come to believe, and I'm curious as to your reaction to this. I don't believe an artist can reach the greater potential without putting pen to paper in some fashion, you know, metaphorically. putting the hand on the page, whether it's a journal, whether it's drawings, doodles, whatever, I think opens the mind and connects to the deeper, darker corners of the mind and enhances the creative process. So when I go into a studio and I don't find journals or drawings or sketches or doodles, I become very concerned.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just curious what you think about that.
I mean, as I said, it was an integral part of me. I've always been a drawer, you know, but really figuring out my drawing practice was really integral for me developing my paintings. In some way, they're like the backbone of my work. Mm-hmm. For me, because they're my keys to what I'm doing. I know working as a painting professor for years now, and drawing professor sometimes, is that I'm always working with my students. Usually work with advanced students to see what they're, you know, you need to be, what are you drawing? Sometimes it's collage, sometimes it's collecting things.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But it's these things to, sometimes it's you know, like, you got to put that on the wall. You got to archive it. You got to keep track. You know, this is important because I do think things come faster. And because you're also not doing the thing that's on a harder support, like a canvas or whatever it is, you're less inhibited. And so, and I think that's important to feel less pressure when you're making things. Yeah, no, I think it's really important. And I think most artists I know do that. You know, you kind of have to.
That's my question, because
sometimes, you know, people don't like to show them, you know. That's why I say some of my writing, I write on the back of these drawings and I erase them before they go out in the world, because I don't think it's so important for people to read all of that,
mm-hmm.
To understand my work.
Right.
So I think artists have a right to have a life and protect some of the things that generate their work that isn't necessary for a viewer or critic for understanding the work. Because I think sometimes that can get in the way of really having their own experience with the work. So, I mean, I just feel sometimes people don't want to share that stuff or put it on the wall as much or think it's as important. But I think it's when I do the same thing when I visit student studios. I'm like, where are your drawings?
Yeah.
And are you drawing?
Right. It becomes an essential, and when I don't find it, as I said, I become alarmed. Do you
mm-hmm.
often go back and look at some of the older work, the older journals, the sketchbooks, or your drawing books? Do you take time to go back and review them?
Yeah, I mean, the drawing books, once the drawings come out, they're just these skeletons. There's nothing to look at in there. They're all the drawings that I've taken out.
Mm-hmm.
And I do, yeah. And I do this thing when after I document them, it's pretty dorky, but I do a little teeny drawing of them, and then I write the text that's on the back, and I have that archived in my studio log,
oh, good.
So I can go look
uh-huh.
back at that. So I keep the writing in case it goes out in the world or I erase it. And then, yeah, I do often, especially, I mean, I don't do it all the time. Sometimes I think it's good to not always look back. When I'm done with a painting, I like to write about it and I go back and read everything I wrote about it and read the back of all the drawings. And that helps me find the, you know, think about it. And actually when I'm working on the painting as well. And they're important to me. I keep them around.
It's just that sometimes you know, you're planting seeds in these moments and then you forget about them, and five years later it's very alive and in your studio, and you go back to that moment and say, well, it's been there all along. There it was. It's just been lying dormant.
Oh, yeah, definitely. That happens a lot.
Yeah, it does. I mean, I'm interested. I collect journals, so I have those in the collection.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And sometimes when artists come back to review the journal that I have,
mm-hmm.
They always remark, oh, my goodness, I forgot about this. Look, you know, and it's very present in their practice at that time. So
mm-hmm.
I'm fascinated by that process. Has there been a significant transformative moment for you in the development of your work?
Yeah, there's been a
maybe
few.
More than one.
Is it okay to?
Yes, of course.
Say more than. I mean, I think part of it is I wasn't one of these people that went, you know, straight to grad school and had a show right away and began a career or something. So, which I think was good for me. I think it was fine. But I think, as I mentioned before, figuring when I had to leave New York for a very brief period and started the notebook drawings while I was recovering from operation, that was super important. I think a major transformative thing for me was in art school. I studied in Italy and I saw these decaying frescoes in Assisi by Cimabue. And I've talked about this, I talk about it a lot, but that was this moment for me where I was like, how do I make a painting like this? This thing has been destroyed through time, but it has an intention to it, you know, like all of these things. And so that sent me on my journey to make work that's sort of process-based, but still works with intention, you know, it's not pure process. And then I got to go back there in 2011, soon after September 11th, and that, when I went back, is when I saw how abstract they were and how physical they were. I didn't register that as much when I first saw them. So that was really important, and that's when I started treating my paintings as objects that go through something. And I started working with eradicating the surface more. And then I spoke about Dijon, that residency, starting the works on paper was great for me because it gave me this other space to go to, and because it really introduced this idea of pressure into the paintings more, and time in a different way. And there was something kind of recently, but I'm not. No, I'm not sure. Now I can't remember. But those are some, you know, I feel like there's been, I'm getting to do the remainders. The remainders are big, and they do relate to sort of life's experience too. And I think, I don't know.
When you said the remainders stay with the paintings, what are you telling me?
The final remainders I've made, those become separate pieces on their own. A lot of them I just have in the studio. The remainder sets, like 1 through 17 for a painting, when they're sort of a contingent piece with the painting, they're not always exhibited with the painting because there's not enough space or it doesn't make sense. But if a painting is purchased, they also, the remainders go with it.
I see.
So it's like this thing, it's like it's always connected to the paintings. They don't get separated out as individual pieces. Like I'll say, oh, this remainder looks great, I'd like that one. It stays together as a sequence, and I make these giant portfolios for them. I've kind of had to invent a way for them to just exist as a thing. So, and then they stay with the paintings wherever they go.
And do you encourage that they be exhibited along with the paintings?
Yeah, I mean, I understand that not many people can do that. I have, at first I was like, they don't have to be exhibited together because it's almost impossible to do that a lot. Mm-hmm. The Rachofsky collection in Dallas was the first time I'd ever seen a painting exhibited with full set of remainders. It's something, something I had never even seen before. Because I don't have space to do it in my studio. They can, be, what I've seen done is sometimes people in their own collections or in their own homes install maybe three from the series and rotate them, or, pick one out to hang up for a while. I feel like in that, regard, what makes sense to them is fine. I used to say that the paintings, for exhibition-wise, the remainders can only be exhibited in a as a whole. But I found that the remainders just needed to be more flexible. And my last exhibition at Altman Siegel what I did is I had the four paintings in the front room, and in the back two rooms, I took a sequence from each of the set of remainders and installed them in the back. And another time, another exhibition at the Rachowski collection at the warehouse, a curator asked, could he take two out for the show? And I said, yeah. You know what I mean? So I'm flexible about it. And that's actually one thing I like about the remainders is they can be fill a whole room and be a monumental installation. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that they sort of expand is kind of cool to me. I want to someday figure out how to make like a book form that they can exist in and be exhibited that way. Again, I like books and I've made books. So I'm trying to figure out how to make a giant book where they can be slipped in and out of, where it could be something that sort of sits in a room, leans against a wall, or is suspended that can be paged through.
I see.
We'll see if that ever happens.
You know, the surfaces of your work are so important. I mean, they evoke such feeling for me.
Mm-hmm.
How do you feel about some of this work being framed with glaze?
You know, how I exhibit them in my exhibits that I'm in charge of is without glass or glazing.
That's the way I prefer.
Yeah, that's the way I do it. I understand that if for certain situations, for its protection, that people want to put them behind. And I know my gallery in San Francisco, it's a problem in California, direct light is a problem. So, I've seen them do it with the museum glass and it looks pretty nice, but my preference is without glazing because you there's just nothing between your body and your eyes and the surface.
Right.
So, that's how I feel about it.
Yeah. Well, I agree totally. So are the remainders framed too?
You know, we did this exhibition, the exhibition at Altman Siegel and the one at James Fuentes where I showed one painting or four plus its 18 remainders. Those I just hung directly on the wall with magnets. That's how I kind of like them.
Mm-hmm.
I like the way they kind of curl at the bottom and they're physical. And that feels good to me. And I like, again, that they can be contracted back into this portfolio.
Right.
The Rachowski collection framed them, and that looks good too. You know, it gave them more of a, like a, you know, I grew up Catholic, so like a Veronica's veil or it gave it more of a, like a formality that I kind of like a relic or something that, you know, it was interesting in itself. And my framing specs for that gives a lot of space around them and all the remainders, the group of remainders, they're not all exactly the same size because the way it works when I'm rolling it and it gets cut. So, you know, you see these different, the frames will all be the same size, but they're not, the remainders aren't the exact same size. So that's how I kind of handle that. So you don't have all these different size frames an inch apart from each other or something. You know.
Is it all considered one work?
The remainders?
I mean, the remainders along with the painting, is it considered one work?
I kind of consider them contingent pieces.
Uh-huh.
They are in relation to each other. The painting does not need to be seen for the remainders to be experienced, and the painting doesn't need the remainders to be experienced on its own, but together as one piece, they sort of fill out.
They have to stay together.
Yeah, they have to stay together. I just, it doesn't, it's what makes sense to me. It's not easy.
No, and how do you control that?
My gallery is great, and they understand that importance. And, you know, it doesn't make sense to change it according to the whim of who's ever interested in the work, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's how we do it, is that's the way it's done.
Okay.
Because that's the concept of the work and sticking to that. And it makes things a little slower sometimes, you know? because it's kind of a different type of commitment, I think, for people. But it really is, like, you don't, as you say, it's not, I don't think it's essential or necessary for them to be exhibited together. So that's how I see it. It's just that I think painting especially, it's hard for people for them to think out of bounds with it. And I like to just push people to think about what the potential of art is, and that the paintings are hold so much and are not like a lot of other paintings the way they're made. And so when the paintings go out in the world, for them to have this remainders makes sense because it's kind of their archive.
Mm-hmm.
So
well, it's got to be in it. You must read when you see them together as a really rich dialogue.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you're seeing it in layers almost.
Mm-hmm. And I would say, too, the remainders are not, like, answers. They're mysterious on their own and abstract, and they move between things being really visible and things being kind of invisible. So I think of them as a different type of poetics of time that go alongside the painting.
A beautiful concept. I love it. Well, we're getting off here, but I probably need another half hour. But I wanted to ask you about artist residencies.
Mm-hmm.
Just a comment on artist residencies.
I've done a few, and they've always been like good because I get out of my system, out of my what I'm doing. It has to be at the right time for me. I mean, because I live in New York and around a community of artists, more recently I've done residencies where I'm off by myself. The one in Dijon, I did this one at Steep Rock in rural Connecticut with my family came with me. That's like I need to sort of just get away from everything. And those are important, I think, for that reason. When I was very fortunate to do the Marie Wall Sharp residency when I was younger. I was 26 in New York. That's when it was in Dumbo, and that's a year studio residency. It was in Manhattan at that time, and that was great because it just those type of group residencies, you just meet people and you work alongside people that aren't part of your natural community, and so that was as an emerging artist, a nice solid studio to work in. So I think they're great things. I'm not someone with the way that I work, it's not very easily portable. So I can't live that artist life where I go from residency to residency. I really have like a system in place in my studio, and I have a lot of tools, and I have a special table and chair I like, things like that. So I don't know.
Well, and you have this—it's an enormous. I mean, it's a rigorous process.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, this was
instituted in your studio.
Yeah, I mean, it's not very fancy. It's very rugged. It doesn't take a lot of fancy things, but it just is. It's very particular and specific. So,
Would you comment on slow art?
I mean, it's something that I'm pretty committed to. I think. I had to just get, you know, I think it's important. I think all art has a slowness to it, in a sense. But I feel like for me, I want to make something that really slows people down. And they think it's one thing at first, and maybe it's a different thing, and they have to think differently about what they're looking at, and things aren't as they seem. I think that we live in such an image-saturated world now that we often look at things too quickly and think we know what we're looking at right away. And so I think it's just, for me, it's something that makes sense to me because I feel like it offers something, like this slowed down. I think of painting as, for me, as kind of time-based and shifts and changes for the viewer, and my drawings do in specific ways too, the way they deal with the physicality or with subtlety. And, you know, it doesn't operate so well in the screen-based world, and that's just something I've learned to live with for a long time. And the work it has its residual image that comes on and transmits through images and through devices, but it's real. What it really is an object in space to be viewed at with eyes and a body that moves through space. And I just think that's important because it's just part of our experience as human beings. I think especially now, well, dealing with what we're doing, dealing with where we can't really get together and see each other in person, it makes me think of it being, you know, very particular and important because I think it's really hard for people to relate to each other without seeing each other, being in the presence of each other. So, I mean, I think there's a way that we can do it via technology that's exciting that we can do it, but it's different. And so that's why I think a painting in, or, you know, these drawings, these objects in space, like not giving you everything that you need, want right away is important. It, in the end, gives you more, I think.
Mm-hmm. Well, I just don't think you can make that human-to-human connection
mm-hmm.
outside of the firsthand experience.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, just it for me, I have to feel the work.
Yeah.
And when I'm in the presence of it, I know whether I feel it or not.
Mm-hmm.
On a screen, I'm really looking at just basic elements.
Yeah.
Do I like the composition? I can't really feel the texture.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think there is a replacement, but we're sort of hurling towards some new era with how digital is going to translate. Be interesting to see. It's foreign to me.
Yeah. I mean,
I'm having to adapt.
Yeah, me too. And you know, I feel like for me as an artist, that's where like the text and writing comes important, you know,
mm-hmm.
as a role. So, you know, I don't know. I mean, I feel like just, you know, it's important to me as an artist and for artists in general to just do what they do and to not always do what is marketably going to be the best thing or something, you know? So
right.
That's our job. I mean, that's home base for me is like, I'm not going to do this because it'll look better in an image, you know? That doesn't
right.
make sense to me at all. So, you know, I mean, it's hard to, you know, you apply for grants, you put images out there and you can't really get the sense of the thing. People have to see the thing to know it. But that's the whole point to me. So.
I'm going to ask one more question.
Mm-hmm.
What's the most important thing you might, advice you might offer? Let me rephrase that. What's the most important thing you think an emerging artist needs to understand that's not written in the pedagogy?
I think it's just really important to find out what art means to you and what is important. Like, you know, I teach a lot, so I do this a lot, but I don't know why but I think it's like really letting yourself get into the thing that you're into and not think that it should be another way because that's the way it should be done. Or that, I mean, the whole point of artists and art to me is that you don't fit in and your work has to find its own voice. And alongside that, I think it's really important, though, to be open to community and to reach out to your peers and interact with other artists because I think we learn from each other.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that having a strong sense of self and self-direction is super important, but finding who you can talk to and share your work with amongst artists, not just galleries, not the internet, but other artists, is having conversations in each other's workspace or wherever it is you make work is really super important to growing as an artist. And also, that's more than one thing. But just the other thing is that just understand that it all takes time. If it's not happening right away, that doesn't mean it's not going to happen.
Wow. I wish we could talk 3 more hours. There's so many more questions. I want to delve
okay,
into the neuroscience and the phenomenology and all of these things. But But I promise you 45 minutes. And I'm really grateful to have this opportunity to meet you, however, by phone.
Mm-hmm.
And I hope that I can meet you in person at some time.
Yeah, same here.
Once things open up. I will eventually send you an edited transcript of this interview, and I will be storing these in my archives, as I told you, as a resource for students who study the collection.
Okay, great. Thank you so much.
So I'm happy to have your voice included. So thank you, and
okay,
you enjoy the rest of your weekend.
Bye.
Okay, bye.